ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So reading today from the fifth canto, chapter number 10, chapter entitled Maharaj Rahuguna meets Jad Bharat, text number 11. Jivan ratatvam niyamena rajan adyantavadyad vikratasya drishtam स्वस्वाम्य भावो ध्रुव एद्य यत्र तारुच्यते सौविदिक् प्रत्ययोगः ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद। श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। ट्रांसलेशन। My dear king, you have unnecessarily accused me of being dead, though alive. In this regard, I can only say that this is the case everywhere, because everything material has its beginning and end. As far as you are thinking that you are the king and master and are thus trying to order me, this is also incorrect, because these positions are temporary. Today you are a king and I am your servant, but tomorrow the position may be changed. And you may be my servant and I your master. These are temporary circumstances created by providence. Purport. The bodily conception is a basic principle of suffering in material existence. In Kali Yuga especially, people are so uneducated that they cannot even understand that the body is changing at every moment and that the ultimate change is called death. In this life, one may be a king, and in the next life, one may be a dog, according to karma. The spirit soul is in deep slumber caused by the force of material nature. He is put in one type of condition and again changed into another type. Without self-realization and knowledge, conditional life continues, and one falsely claims himself a king, a servant, a cat, or a dog. Those are simply different transformations brought about by the supreme arrangement. One should not be misled by such temporary bodily conceptions. Actually, no one is master within the material world, for everyone is under the control of material nature, which is under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the ultimate master. As explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Ekale Ishwara Krishna Arasabhya Bratya. The only master is Krishna and everyone else is a servant. Forgetfulness of a relationship with the Supreme Lord brings about a suffering in the material world. So we are continuing to read about the instructions of Maharaj of Jad Bharat to Maharaj Raghuna. And in this purport, Srila Prabhupada begins by saying that the principle of suffering in material existence is this bodily conception of life. Particularly in the age of Kali Yuga, we see in the outside world this affectation for this material body is so strong. This identification to this material body is so strong that people are going to any extent to somehow or the other ensure that their body and everything in relation to their body is preserved and enhanced. Recently, I came across a nice article which was sent to me on the email. About the futility of a human existence that is wasted in trying to accumulate material wealth. So this was a real life story or real life experience about a person who qualified as a software engineer and decided to go abroad. He put in so much of effort just to ensure that each and every formality that is required is completed. And we all know that in order to get a visa to the United States, it's not a very easy thing nowadays. So this person somehow or the other managed to get a visa and he went abroad. And he's now relating his experiences. So he reaches the shores of America, and like all individuals who go abroad, including my experience, is that the foreign currency that is there is naturally much stronger than our Indian currency. So the tendency is to convert everything into the Indian currency or Indian rupee. And as we all know, a dollar is something like 44-45 rupees to a dollar. And typically a bottle of milk will cost about $1 to $1.5. A kilo of cabbage will cost about $2. Right? And the immediate reaction of the individual, the first time that is abroad, would be to convert it into rupees. And immediately make a comparison and say, my God, cabbage here costs 10 rupees a kilo. And what I'm actually paying is 90 rupees a kilo. I'm having milk here which costs me 15 rupees a liter and I'm paying over there 45 rupees a liter. Not realizing that actually from the purchasing power parity, there is not much difference between what we purchase over there and what we purchase over here. But because his consciousness is continuously occupied with trying to save money so that he can bring that much more money back over here in order to make his lifestyle as comfortable as possible, he's always into this mode of conversion for everything. And for this reason, what he would be doing is that everything would be structured into ensuring that his cost of living is as minimal as possible. He would be staying, and in fact, this particular person also was staying in a very humble accommodation, sometimes not even putting on the heater during the winter months to ensure that electricity is saved, because electricity is one of the most expensive items there. In the Western countries, electricity is one of the most expensive items. So, trying to save electricity, he would take additional rug and not put on the heater, call to India with the cheapest possible card, telephone card, and so on. And eat in McDonald's, eat in Pizza Hut. Because even if a person wishes to go to an Indian restaurant abroad, it's very, very expensive. In fact, it's more expensive than eating in an American restaurant. Because it's exotic. Indian food abroad is considered as exotic. So one has to pay more just in order to eat in an Indian restaurant. In fact, a meal for one person would be as much as $40-$50. And if this poor fellow going over there starts converting it, you can imagine he's thinking in terms of 2,000 rupees for a meal, which is not even what it would cost him in a super five-star hotel over here. So obviously he would never even enter the portals of an Indian restaurant, or may not even look at it because out of sight, out of mind. And then like this, he manages to pull on for a few years, and all of a sudden one day he gets a letter from his parents saying that, my dear son, you're now 5 years in America, it's now time for you to get married. So we have already selected the girl for you, but it is finally up to you to decide whom you're going to marry. So please come and take sufficient leave so that you can make your choice among the several girls that we have lined up and get married and take her along with you to America. In fact, we have already obtained all the papers for her visa. So this boy takes about 15-20 days leave, that's all that he can manage, and comes to India by the cheapest flight, naturally, going via Middle East. all sorts of detour, spending about 15 hours in the airport, in the transit lounge. So this is how people behave. And this is a fact. I mean, most of the people who go abroad, they might be giving you a very wonderful and a glamorous notion of what it is to be abroad. But then if you come down to the basic qualities of how that person spends his money, you will find that this is all the austerities that he has to go through. And I can tell you that it's really a big austerity to be living in the US, earning that sort of money and converting each time. So this person reaches India, and then within that 15 days, somehow or the other, he selects his bride. The first 7-8 days goes in making all sorts of comparisons between the ladies, and then he realizes that the time for him to go back is coming nearer, and then he finally makes a selection, which is ultimately for him a compromise. He doesn't have the time. And then the marriage is arranged within 2-3 days. Visa papers are processed, and his wife joins him in America. And then in the US, naturally, the wife has never ventured abroad. So first 2 months, everything is very beautiful. Now, this is what he has actually related in the internet. I mean, this is not my story, it's his story. So first 2 months, everything is very beautiful. First time she's seeing snow in her life. First time she's seeing beautiful, beautiful highways, super fast cars which can travel at the speed of 200 kilometers an hour. There are no speed breakers, there are no potholes. Everything is so beautiful. And then after 2 months, she starts getting homesick. And then she starts making calls home. First it is once in a week, then it's twice a week, then it's 3 times a week, then it's every day. And then she speaks for half of an hour, and this fellow here is watching the car meter ticking away and feeling the pain in his heart, but still his wife is new, so how can he tell her that don't make so much of calls, don't spend so much of money? Like it is said that when a person opens a door of the car for his wife, either of two things are possible. Either the car is new or the wife is new. So, initial days with his wife naturally is very, very... he wants to project a proper image to his wife that he's a very successful person, has earned a lot of money. So naturally he will not tell her anything about how to save money. But then this lady gets so much homesick. And then finally she tells her husband that I would like to go back to India for some time. And then they visit for holidays like that. And then after that, they have children. And then life is going on as usual. Several years pass, the children grow up. And the wife has never lost her roots with the mother country, with India. And her affection actually on a day-to-day basis keeps on increasing. And she wants to come back. And then one day she tells her husband that enough is enough. Now you have earned sufficient money. Let's go back to India. So what can the husband say? They pack bag and baggage. He leaves his job, comes over here to India. And then he finds that in the meantime, the cost of living has gone up so much that he can't even afford a house in India. What to talk about a two-bedroom flat. Even a one-bedroom flat seems to be out of his reach. So then he tells his wife, okay, you want to be in India. You be in India. I'll go abroad. And meantime, his children have grown up. And the children say, now, we are not able to relate to India anymore. We would like to come with you to the US. So the father says, okay. So the two sons and the father, they go back to US. And the sons go to school. Then after that, they go to college. Everything is going on very nicely. In the meantime, the mother over here, she is also feeling very lonely. There are no more parents for her to be, to take care of her. Time passes. The children never come back to India again. This is the last time that they ever come to India. Never again would they ever come back to India. And they make their careers over there. Our man, our friend, becomes 60 years of age. And that's the age when, whatever you may be, whoever you may be, you are required to leave your organization. That's a cutoff. Finally, the litmus test of a person, to what extent he is attached, is really tested at the time of his 60th birthday. which is actually the date when you're given your final letter by the company and say that now you're on pension. And thank you very much for the 35 years of service that you have put in with us. This happens in India all the time, that we find people who spend 35, 40 years in an organization. Practically, immediately out of college, they join a company and then they retire in that company. And it's happening even today, although it's not so common, but still. And typically you find that these are the people who are actually treated the worst by the company. So this person who puts in so many years in the organization, just before he is to leave, because the company has to pay him lifelong pension. So what the company does is, it starts ignoring this person. So a person who has spent 40 years and risen from the ranks, from a clerk to be a general manager, or maybe sometimes even a director of a company, he's found that at that position, just 2 years before his retirement, this company somehow takes him from that position and puts him into a position which is very, very insignificant. And for a person who has been honored, dishonor is worse than death. But yet he cannot leave the organization because in 2 years he's going to get his pension. If he resigns from that company, there's no pension. Right? So the company also knows this, that this man is not going to leave. He is going to continue. And he's become useless because at the age of 58, what do you expect him to contribute in terms of he's a spent force. Right? So the company just puts him in a corner and forgets about him. And I can tell you that this person endures for those 2 years living death. I've seen it with my own eyes. How such a person goes through such a traumatic experience, because that same person who was such an important person in the organization overnight becomes a non-entity. And even the security officer in the gate does not even salute him now. So you can imagine his pathetic condition. And every day he comes to office, he doesn't have any work, reads the newspaper the whole day, keeps on drinking tea, becomes increasingly frustrated, and finally at the age of 60, he's kicked out for all practical purposes. Whatever you may call it, they arrange a nice function for him, they garland him with so many garlands, give him bouquets, they speak so many things nice about him. For 40 years, you have served an organization, and blah, 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 and everybody's, you know, everybody has samosas and tea, and then that's it. And then our poor man has to literally walk alone outside this company. And more often than not, the experience has been that within 1 year after this person has retired from the company, he leaves his body. Because just that 2 years of being treated so shabbily by the company is such an insult and so unbearable for him that his complete health deteriorates. And still, people think that the goal of life is to retire from this organization after spending 40 years. In fact, in the company that I was working for, they would give you a plaque. They would give you a copper plaque at the end of 40 years. And there were several people every year who would get this plaque, which was the bust of the founder of Siemens. Werner von Siemens was the founder of Siemens. He founded Siemens about 150 years back. And his bust was about 5 kilos. In market value, it will be not more than 500-600 rupees. But you get this bust after completing 40 years of service, and you're expected to prominently display this in your office till you retire. That I'm a person who's completed 40 years in this organization. So our person retires, and then he puts forward all the money that he has collected, comes back to India. And then now he needs an accommodation. And he looks around and he finds that at the most, what he can buy is a 2-bedroom apartment in some suburb in the particular city where he wants to stay. And actually, before he left for the US, when his parents had retired, at that time his parents had, with their retirement savings, purchased a 1-bedroom flat. And this 1-bedroom flat was still there, available. But then now that he has come back, he would like to buy his own accommodation. So he purchases a 2-bedroom flat. And then he starts reflecting to himself, my God, after spending so many years abroad, what have I finally achieved? One extra bedroom. This is all that I've achieved. One extra bedroom for so much of effort that I have put in order to earn this money. And where has the money gone? Because the person who goes abroad has to maintain a particular standard of life, at least as far as the people here are concerned. Right? So when he comes from abroad, there he might be living on pizzas and burgers. But when he comes over here, he has to ensure that he takes his kith and kin to a five-star hotel. He takes them out to the seashore. He takes them out on holidays. He takes them out on pilgrimages. All this at his cost. Because he has to show to his relatives that he has earned a lot of money abroad. He is earning a lot of money and he can afford to spend so much of money. So every time he comes over here, when he goes back, he's broke. So where's the question of savings? So after spending 30 years abroad and the children have settled over there, children have got no roots and they come and they don't have any inclination to come back over here. This person is so miserable. So forgetfulness of our relationship with the Supreme Lord brings about suffering in the material world. Srila Prabhupada in the Purport writes so clearly. As against this, we see that our devotees who are abroad, who go abroad, who are completely focused around Krishna, whose center of life is Krishna. Even though they might be spending years there, for whatever reason, maybe because they're not able to get a job over here, or maybe because of their qualifications, they are not getting remuneration which is commensurate. But for whatever reason, the number of years that they spend abroad, their consciousness is so strong. And their inclination, all the time meditating on Vrindavan, meditating on Mayapur, meditating on Radha Gopinath. So there's such a sea of difference between these two types of people. And unfortunately, majority of the people who go over there just to forget their relationship with God. I go for a walk every day in the evening at the sea face, Valli sea face. And the different types of people that you see over there is really an eye-opener of how a person could leave forgetting about his relationship with God. You see different types of people over there. You see very young people. You see people who are in the age group of 17, 18. You see middle-aged. You see elderly. And you see very old. When I say very old, I mean people who are 80 plus. Right? They would be coming on their walkers. Now walker is like a stick, but it's a bigger version of a stick. So even a stick, they've gone past the stick now. they hold both their hands. They can't hold both their hands a stick. So it's a walker which is like a rod like this in front, and you just keep it in front, and then you... Every day they would be there at the sea face, spending hours together. They will come at about 5 o'clock and return home only at 9. And actually one day it so happened that after I had finished my walk, I was sitting on a bench, and one such old person came and sat next to me. And this person was mumbling to himself, and he was practically incoherent. He was not able to speak words clearly. A typical symptom of old age, must be suffering from some either Parkinson's or Alzheimer's or some such disease. And after some time, his daughter-in-law came and sat next to him. And she was taking care of him and, looking after him. And so I was just wondering to myself that this is a very unusual relationship that you don't see so much of this nowadays. When a young person comes and sits next to an old person and takes so much of care. So, anyway, I thought this must be an unusual family, and I just left it like that. A couple of days later, when I happened to be over there in that sea face once again, and I saw the same person sitting over there, and now he was surrounded by a whole group of his family members. And it so happened that one of the persons who was there, somehow I had known him some years back, and I suddenly recognized him, and I went to him and I started speaking to him and asked him, where are you and how come I have not seen you for so many years and like that. So then I asked this friend of mine, who is this person? And he said he is our uncle. We are all his nephews and nieces, and this person is a very, very wealthy person. He's got so much of money that we are sure, and there's nobody who is directly in his line of descent. He doesn't have any children. He doesn't have a wife. And we are his only uncles. We are his only nephews and nieces. And in fact, we actually stay in England. We have relocated over there. But because this person is in such a bad state of health, we have come over here. And I can tell you, he told me this privately, that once he leaves his body, there's no need for us to go to England again. For the rest of our life, and not only for the rest of our life, for eternity, for few generations of ours, our family members are going to be taken care of by the wealth that is going to come from this person. So this people are just connected to him because of whatever money he has got. Otherwise, there is absolutely no... So I was just thinking in my mind that, my God, if such a thing happens to me when I am 80 years old and I don't have any money with me, right? And I suffer from Alzheimer's or Parkinson's, what would be my condition? Literally out in the streets. But we try to talk to such a person. I mean, it's impossible for such a person to be even comprehending anything about Krishna consciousness. So we see different realizations, or we get different realizations from such experiences. And in fact, the scriptures tell us that material nature is arranged to make us miserable. Dukkalayam ashashvatam. This world is miserable and it is a temporary place. And any person who tries to make this into a place which is happy or permanent is bound to fail. Is bound to be frustrated. Because the whole material nature is arranged in such a way that somehow or the other, whatever we may be, whatever situation we may be, whoever we may be, we are bound to get frustrated. And then we find that in spite of this, in spite of seeing, actually, you don't even have to read the scriptures, actually. When you go out into the material world, when you go to a place like Dharavi, or you go to a place like Nalasopara, or some such place which is really relatively poor, we find that the quality of life that people are leading is so pathetic that any intelligent person actually realizes, yes, this is something that could happen to me at any time. In what way am I different that such a thing is not going to happen to me? And yet we find that people are spending exorbitant amounts of money in such wasteful expenditure. I was reading an article that day that there is one person now who is planning to spend something like £200 million just to purchase a yacht. Now, £200 million is something like, that's 20 crores of pounds, which is about 1,600. In today's conversion rate, is 1,600 crore rupees. 1,600 crores of rupees just to purchase a yacht, which is just another house, but on a sea. And he is purchasing this yacht from a person who is the second wealthiest person in the world, who has just used that yacht for 3 months. And this person expects that he would be getting happiness out of it. So why is it that what makes people drive themselves to get all this material facilities and yet not have the understanding that all this is temporary, it can be taken away at any time? Can we imagine that in the place like Mumbai, where 99% of the people live in apartments which are maybe 300 to 400 square feet. There are flats which are 16,000 square feet. Can you imagine 16,000 square feet, which is about 5 times the size of this hall, this temple hall. And this apartment has a golf course, mini golf course. It has its own swimming pool. It has its own garden. Right? And the rent of this apartment is 12 lakhs a month. It's inconceivable. It's unimaginable that in Bombay we have people who can live in such apartments and yet see there is so much of unhappiness, misery all around you. People living in the street. Just a statistic, but it is again an eye-opener that there are more than 2,000 people living in Mahim, that seashore that we have, that small stretch of seashore. Every night there are over 2,000 people who come and sleep over there. And any of us who are passing through that particular stretch would like to leave that stretch behind as early as possible. Correct? Because it's the stinkiest stretch in the whole of Mumbai. Yeah, because you have the Mahim Causeway which passes through that area. Right? All the sewage, the filth of Mumbai is washed and dumped into the ocean from that place, from that exit point. 2,000 people. And just one newspaper carried out a survey to find out what is the type of people who are sleeping over there. Majority of them drug addicts, alcoholics, beggars. Of course, most of them are beggars. So we see that in spite of reading all about this, experiencing all this, how is it that a person is not able to comprehend that whatever he is having, whatever he is achieving, whatever he is able to get by his past karma, is temporary, will be taken away any time. So the kings of the earlier ages had this realization. And that is why they were such exemplary kings. Right? Even Raghuna was a great king actually. It was just that he was bewildered for some point of time, and the moment Jadbharat opened his eyes, he realized, yes, what a great soul he was. Immediately he paid his prostrated obeisance at the lotus feet of Jadbharat. But kings like Maharaj Shibi, Maharaj Yayati, such great kings, completely dovetailing all their activities in the service of their subjects. We all know the story of Maharaj Shibi. Just to protect a pigeon, he went to such great extent, cutting off his own flesh and finally sitting on the weighing scale himself. Of course, it was the demigods who were testing him. Lord Indra had taken the form of an eagle and Agnidev had taken the form of a pigeon. And Maharaj Shibi passed that test. 100% marks. Or for that matter, Maharaj Rantidev. What sort of a king was he? Can you imagine in this day somebody doing Nirjal Ekadashi for 48 days? For the last 2 months, I've been meditating on this Nirjal Ekadashi that is coming in a few days from now. Wondering, somehow or the other, we have to make arrangements to see that we do it nicely in proper consciousness, not all the time thinking about prasad, all the time thinking about water. At least for me, it requires a lot of preparation internally. But Maharaj Rantidev did this tapasya for 48 days. And practically, they were on the verge of death. And not only himself, his whole family were involved in this. And at the end of 48 days, when prasadam that was cooked in pure ghee, a substantial quantity of it was offered to him, and he was about to honor that prasadam, at that time there was a knock on the door. And when they opened the door, they find that there's a brahmana standing outside. Immediately, King Rantidev invited that brahmana inside, washed his lotus feet, and fed him this prasadam. And then after the Brahmana departed, completely satisfied, then King Rantidev was once again about to eat prasadam. Again there was a knock on the door. And then there was a Shudra outside, again asking for some prasadam. Again King Rantidev fed him. And then there was a very little quantity remaining, just sufficient for him and his family members. And he was about to honor that. At that time, again there was a knock on the door. And there was a dog eater with his pack of dogs. And they requested for some food. King Rantidev gave him everything. Just a little bit of water remaining, which they were about to take. At that time, again there was a knock on the door. And there was a chandala standing outside. King Rantidev was on the verge of death. He just took that water and gave it to this chandala. What sort of a king is this? Can we ever imagine a politician of today's of today being of such a caliber? Impossible. It's not just the effect of Kali Yuga, but it is just how people are today. There's no question of performing any austerity. There's no question of giving any charity in its real sense. Mundane charity for the sake of some social recognition, all that is going on. But really, charity in terms of spiritual upliftment, there is hardly any charity like that going on today. Maharaj Yudhishthir, and what to talk about Maharaj Prataprudra. A king who says that I will renounce my entire kingdom if I do not get the darshan of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's so unhappy when Sarvam Bhattacharya comes and tells him that the Lord will not see you because he's a sannyasi, and for a sannyasi to be associating with a materialistic person like the king is worse than death. So Maharaj Prataprudra's heart breaks into millions of pieces and he says, What will I have to do in order to get the association of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? I am ready to sacrifice my entire kingdom. Who cares for this kingdom if I am not able to get the darshan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? And again and again and again he would plead with Sarvam Bhattacharya, please, somehow or the other, create the situation that I can meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And finally, by the will of the Lord himself, when he realized that Prataprudra was really such a humble soul and he really wanted to get his association, that he made this arrangement after the Rath Yatra was during the Rath Yatra. So these were the kings like Maharaj Raghuguna, who, although they had everything, they ensured that everything was used in the service of the Lord. So in conclusion, Srila Prabhupada says in one of his, of course Prabhupada emphasizes this particular point time and again and again and again and again, but in one particular morning walk with Paramahamsa Prabhu, Srila Prabhupada was talking about association of devotees. He told Paramahamsa Prabhu that you have to associate with devotees. And that is the only way by which you will be able to be successful in Krishna consciousness. And in addition to that, you have to give your association to others so that they can in turn elevate their consciousness. So Paramahamsa Prabhu said that Prabhupada, if I have to give my association to other non-devotees, then what will happen is that I will compromise in my spiritual life and I will fall down. So Srila Prabhupada said, yes, if you do this without ensuring that you are doing it in a mood of service, then you will compromise in your spiritual life and you will fall down. So you have to give them your association in the mood of service as their servant. So it's only by association of devotees that we will be able to continuously remember about our relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's no other way. Srila Prabhupada would say that If anybody thinks that he can make spiritual advancement without the association of devotees, he is insane. So insane means mad. So the relationship that we have established, although it's insignificant, for us to really aspire to go home back to Godhead, this relationship has got to be so strong. But at least now we have made this relationship. Somehow by our past pious credits, by the causeless mercy of the Lord, by the causeless mercy of a pure devotee, we have been given this opportunity to establish this relationship and to strengthen that relationship and to perfect our life. So we have to work on this, ensuring that this relationship remains till the end of our life. And somehow or the other, remain in Krishna consciousness. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions? Comments? Shyamalan Prabhu? Gantraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki chai, Srila Prabhupada ki chai, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki chai.